Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 everyone, to another night in the Red Room Radio. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us again tonight. We had a break last week, and I truly apologize for not being available. But, you know, there comes a time when you just can't be in two places at one time. At some point, we're going to be able to keep it moving because my co-hosts are just stepping up and are just being the awesome co-hosts that they are. So if at any point I can't be in the Red Room, you're still going to be able to come into the Red Room with my awesome co-hosts, James and Sarah Lynn. Sarah Lynn probably doesn't even know that yet, but she's going to be hosting a show for us very, very soon. I want to thank everybody again for joining us on the show tonight. And first and foremost, there's something that I want to do that, in spite of whatever it is that we talk about, I want everyone to know that we care. We open up the topics that we talk about on the show because they're topics that, you know, people are thinking, that they're feeling, and it's an opportunity for us to share and discuss them. But first and foremost, from everyone in the Red Room, we would like to offer our condolences and prayers to the families and those who are feeling just a moment or moments will continue to forever feel moments of loss and are recovering from what has happened in the D.C. area from the Navy Yard incident. Please know that you are constantly in our prayers. And if there is anything that anyone who is listening to this show would love for or could have anyone from us in the Red Room do to help and support them, please know and understand that we are there for support of any kind of way to help. You can always reach us at info@theredroomradio.com. And this show is not just about talking about topics that we come up with, but it's about supporting and helping others. Tonight's topic is one that is a little bit different from some of the other topics that we have talked about. And I'm just hoping that at some point, no one is disappointed that tonight we're not going to be diving into something that is directly related to, you know, intimacy or sex. And as anyone has listened to any of our other shows, know that, you know, we did have a topic where someone did mention the pencil, and I'll just leave it at that. But hopefully you won't be disappointed with tonight's show. But no one understands that we go so many places in the Red Room, you just never know what to expect. But I want to say that for tonight's topic, it came from an article that I read last week in the USA Today. And the article was entitled, Remarriage in an Age of Cohabitation. And I found it very interesting. And I think that's why tonight's topic was, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? Because what I found interesting was that the surveys that were revealed in this article showed that only 29 of every 1,000 divorced or widowed people got remarried in 2011. Now, those statistics only showed divorced and widowed, but as I read the article, I could even somewhat understand the apprehension or the reserve for taking the plunge a second time, third time, or fourth time for divorced individuals. So I wanted to take a look at those who have never been married and see if I could find statistics that were relevant to marriage versus living together. What I found was there is a decline in marriage, yet a rise and cohabitation among people who have never been married. And this made me wonder why. Some of the things I think about, I think sometimes people think, well, you know, she just has too much time on her hands. But I need to figure out things that relate to relationships. That I mean, because my whole purpose is to find a way for us to help get this right. So first I want to say I'm not for nor am I against living together. Been there, done that myself. But I wanted a better understanding of how living together either impacts or affects relationships. And I'm all about learning from mistakes, my own as well, as others. to see if some way we can avoid making the same mistakes and at some point getting it right. Now, what my research found was several facts. And I know the numbers probably, you know, are just going to sound like numbers, and they probably won't mean anything. But once you hear them, if you really think about the importance of these numbers, it kind of gives you one of those moments where you're like, What I found was statistics showed that in the U.S., with a population of 287 million adults, and we're talking about people that are 18 and over, only 2.1 million people got married. And according to the 2012 census data, 7.8 million people were living together, either foregoing or postponing the marriage vows. Now, what was interesting was surveys revealed the reasoning based on age. And I can understand for age, because if you're 20-something, the idea of you being married or the thought of you being married is probably not, you know, where you're looking at a relationship. And basically for the young, cohabitation is probably, you know, the prelude to marriage. But what I found was for older adults, it's a long-term alternative to marriage. So it's almost like if you're young, living together means one thing, but if you're older, it means that you've just lost all hope, all sight, all interest in ever remarrying. And I do understand that, you know, generations ago, living together was frowned upon and it was considered taboo, but that's no longer. Nobody even frowns about living together anymore. It's just, it's considered the norm. We have a tendency to kind of adapt to what society says is normal, and living together is normal. So my question that just kept popping up in my mind is, do the other 270-some million people in the world believe that marriage is still part of the American dream, where, you know, you have the spouse, the house, and the 2.5 kids, and of course the 0.5 is a dog, cat, bird, whatever it is you want your pet to be. But at some point, I mean, when in my generation, that was the American dream. That's what we were raised to believe is a certain goal in our life. Yes, a career is important, but from a personal aspect, a relationship aspect, our goal was to have the American dream of having the husband or the wife. So I just wonder if that's still part of the American dream, and how younger people and even older people in this society think, or will they at some point just fit into those 270-some million people just fit into the let's live together category, and if so, why? Okay. Now, I always poll. I have to ask people because I need, my way of thinking is just my way of thinking, and I always question, so I always have to ask people. And it's usually asking people that I directly communicate with, and I send out emails and surveys just to see if anybody is willing to, you know, give me some feedback. And what I found interesting was this time I got responses from people who I had sent emails to asking certain questions for several shows and had never even gotten a response from. But this time I did. And the question was, you know, it was asking the opinion on marriage versus living together. And these are just three. I think I'm just going to read. Actually, it's four. Three. I'm going to read the responses that I got back. The first one says, the difference between living together and marriage is the difference between renting a house and buying a house. When you rent, you live there, but someone else takes care of all the leaks and the plumbing, and when things break down, you can always move out. But when you buy the house, you know you're responsible for every little thing, and there's something nice about coming home to something you've invested in and are working hard to keep. The next one said, a marriage license is just a simple piece of paper, just as an engagement ring is just a piece of jewelry. And a wedding reception is, I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm actually reading from the responses. A wedding reception is just a party. They're symbols, right? You don't need them. But what's the harm? To me, adamantly refusing to get married is a symbol too. A symbol that you don't have as much faith in the relationship as you'd like. Then the last response that I'm going to read says, marriage is non-romantic. Marriage is sad. Marriage is irrelevant. Living together is living together. Sign me happily companioned for 22 years and counting. And a vehemently anti-marriage female and mother of an illegitimate and splendid baby. Now, I saved the last one for last because when I read that, I have to say that I had kind of a strange reaction to it because, you know, I'm thinking to myself, she's very bold about the fact that she's anti-marriage and she doesn't care. So I just want to, you know, I mean, from my panel, I mean, I'm not sure how the response for tonight's show is going to hit you guys, but I really am interested in what you have to say about tonight's topic. Before I get started, I guess maybe you guys already know this obviously kind of got under my skin or struck a nerve or something because we started off the show and I didn't even introduce a single person. I just made most important the most important, and we just kept it moving. But I do want to say that more importantly than the start of our show, offering our condolences and our prayers, I want to introduce my co-host, who I still say every week is the hardest working man in Hotlanta, my co-host James, and my other co-host who still hasn't really called herself that yet, but she knows that she's moving into position, Sarah Lynn. Are you guys on the show with us tonight?
Yes, we are.
Hey, Sarah Lynn, how
welcome,
you doing?
Welcome, y'all. I'm sure y'all already see that this topic is one that, you know, kind of threw you off because I know it's not quite as racy as some of the other topics that we've talked about, but it's one that it really made me think. You know, some of the topics that we talk about always make me think, but this is one that, you know, just kind of made me wonder, you know, where are we going as a society where, you know, the institution of marriage is, it's so watered down and living together is more of an attractive feature in relationships than marriage is now. So I'm going to give you guys a chance to just chime in and either tell me I'm crazy, or just tell me what you think.
Sarah Lynn, you can start it off.
Thank you, James. I do still think that marriage is still an institution to be kept for that word, for better or for worse. It's hard, or it's a shame, actually, that people treat it like a stepping stone. But in my heart, it is still something that's sacred to me as a married person. There's a lot of people out there that who's supposed to be looking up to people, and yet still, a lot of people are looking up to those people, and yet still, every 5 days, they're getting a divorce. I don't know why people look up to people. They see just working on a television screen or making extra money. I don't know why they put those people in front, because those people have no regard for marriage. Few of them. Still, you can, I don't think you could even say 5% of that population that we look up to is still married over 30 or 25 years, but very, very few of them. But it's a really, really shame.
You know, it's really interesting that you said that, Sarah Lynn, because I think what really led me to know that this was a topic that I should discuss on the show, even though it's not the most raciest of the topics that we have talked about, was after I read this article. I think I read the article on Saturday, and I went to work on Tuesday and met a couple who just, I mean, you could tell that they were just so happy together. And they asked, you know, when I asked the question, I was like, you know, I work in a restaurant. So I asked him, I said, well, what brings you out today? And he looked at her with this expression on his face and a smile that was like he was waiting for her to answer because he knew what she was going to say. And he said, ask my wife what brought us out today. So I looked at her and I said, okay. I said, are you going to tell the secret? And she said, it's not a secret. She said, we are celebrating our 47th wedding anniversary. And the smile on her face matched the smile on his face. And it was almost one where I looked at them and I was almost like, really? 47 years? And, you know, just talking to them and having conversations with them, you know, it led me back to the article that I had read. And I was like, wow. And the thing that he said that was just like he had to make it clear that I knew and understood this was, he said, and with no break in service.
Whoa. I love that.
He said, with no break in service. And she looked at him and she said, none at all. And she made it perfectly clear. She said, I'm not saying that we've never been mad at each other. I'm not saying that we haven't hit bumps in the road. And he said, and I'm not saying that there haven't been times that we just kind of looked at each other and was like, you know, this is not what I signed up for. He said, but the one thing that kept us together was we knew we made the commitment and we were not going to falter on it. He said, we were in it for life. And he just looked at her and he said, and I am just looking forward to the next 47 years if we could ever live that long. So I mean, it was just one of those where it was like, wow, how come? I mean, why? That's such the minority versus, you know, now the majority is saying, oh, we're not going to get married. We're just going to live together. And they were proud of that fact. So I just felt like this is something that, you know, maybe someone out there who's listening to the show, either if they're married and questioning whether they should still be married, if they're thinking about getting married and questioning whether they should get married, should know and understand that this is, it's not the alternative to living together. It's the choice that you make when two people decide that they want to be together forever. So I'm sorry, James, I just had that just kind of hit me when she said that. I just thought about that couple.
Well, now you're good. I mean, it's a, first of all, I don't know who they are, but I commend them and I send my prayers to them that they last longer, you know, until death do they part. Because 47 years without breaks, you don't hear that at all in our time. And it's crazy because I know I was watching, what was it, Housewives of Atlanta or Basketball Housewives, whatever it is, but, you know, the one girl, her and Ocho Cinco, they were only married for 2 months. And
that's, in my
opinion, that's sad. I mean, here you are dating somebody for all this time, and then y'all get married, and then 2 months later, you're filing for a divorce. I mean, that just goes to show that our generation is not built like what we call the old timers or the old school. They're more so based on their marriages off of what they do, what can they do for each other, how can they benefit from someone else, and how much of their Social Security am I going to get when they die, and all this other stuff. It doesn't make sense to me. People need to get it in their minds that if you're going to get married, this is a lifetime commitment. And I'm not going to go by the Bible or anything else like that, but when you make those vows, till death do us part, I'm a firm believer in sticking to your word or sticking to what you say. If you don't mean it, don't do it.
Absolutely.
That's a lifetime commitment. And then when it comes to the divorce and separating, you know, that's more money you got to do with your lawyer and go to court and get the divorce papers and change your name. And it's just a whole headache that I don't understand why people put themselves through if a week later they're going to change it back.
Right.
And I understand what happened. Don't get me wrong. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
No, I'm saying, I understand stuff happens in relationships and marriages, but, you know.
I mean, 2 months, are you really trying? Did you put forth any effort 2 months?
Hell no.
A year. Did you really put forth a year? I mean, because think about it. If we, and I don't misunderstand me, I'm not really comparing marriage to a job, but when you take a job, you're making a commitment for life reasons. It's because you financially need the position. It's going to enhance your life in some way. But you will put forth more effort in pleasing and committing to a job than some people will for marriage. And I just don't understand it. Because, I mean, if you think about it, a person will walk away from a marriage and understand that they may suffer or could suffer some kind of loss or maybe no loss at all. But if you don't like your job and you're not pleased with your job, if your employer is not showing you that they care, if they are not giving you the benefits that you need to grow and to prosper, do you just quit your job? Because if that's the case, I'm going to be the first one to say I should have quit mine a long time ago. But I make the commitment and I go to work every day because it's a commitment that I have made because I know I need that in my life. I made that choice. No one forced me into the job that I'm in. I made the commitment to be there. Now, am I going to stay there forever? No. But if it was a position that I felt is something that I was going to continue to do for the rest of my life, then I would make that commitment. And sometimes people don't put as much effort into relationships and marriage as they should because they feel that it's so easy to walk away. And with that being said, one of the things that I also asked for in the questionnaire that I did was to give the pros and the cons of marriage versus living together. And the things that I found were, what I found interesting was I found more cons than I did pros. I mean, I got responses back where, you know, a couple of people gave me one pro and one con, and then I got, you know, one pro and three or four cons, and I just kind of narrowed it down. And what I realized was, even though, and I did ask the question whether or not they were married, single and living alone, or single and cohabitating. And none of the people that I got responses from were people that were single and living alone. So I guess, you know, kind of touched something somewhere with the people that I did reach out to get information. But these were the three, the top three pros that I got for living together versus being married. One person said, financially, I'm not responsible for everything, and I don't have to deal with the stress of paying all the bills by myself. It's better than struggling. The second person, the second response that I'm reading says, it gives you an opportunity to test drive the relationship before you sign the contract and say, I do. And then the third person said, living together in many states gives you the same recognition and legal rights that are equivalent to marriage. So there's no concerns about health benefits or inheritance. These benefits you get without having to get married. So there's really no reason to say I do. I just found that interesting that these were the pros that they felt were. These were the things that they felt were the reasons why they should live together versus actually getting married. And the first person if I can remember correctly from, this is just a part of the information that I took from the email. This person is someone who is living with someone who it's a she, and she was living alone and decided to move in with someone because financially she was struggling and was in a relationship and felt that this was the only way that she could, you know, kind of get to a better place financially in her life. So she decided to move in with this person, and that's why she said it's better than struggling. What do y'all have to say? I was just.
Can you actually blame them? If they're seeing a way that they don't have to be tied to a knot, if society said it's all right to live together, and after you live together, you have the same rights as your spouse, why should I really get married? Why should I have to go out, buy a dress, buy a ring, find some place to house all these people who just want to see me tied in a knot? The only thing I'm getting out of it is a honeymoon.
And
a piece of paper.
And a piece of paper, and guess what? When I come back from my honeymoon, I'm coming back to a huge bill. Why should I go through all of that?
And it's been 10 years of your marriage trying to pay it off.
And then I could turn around and say, you know what? This is not working for me. Bye-bye.
And just walk away without any consequences at all. I mean, I guess this is one of those situations where it's like I struggle so hard with trying to find. I mean, and y'all know me. I'm either to the left or to the right. I'm a lot of times in the gray, but something somewhere either moves me to the left or to the right. But this situation was one that I have to say keeps me in the gray, because I do know and understand the reason that some people feel the way that they feel. But I still have to say that me personally, I can't lose hope in believing that people have to understand that there's a benefit to marriage. And I say that because the last chapter in my book speaks for itself. I have to believe that we are all in a place where that perfect person for us, I'm not saying that person is perfect, don't get me wrong, that perfect person is for us, they will come into our life some kind of way. And when they do, we want to assure that person that we believe it, we know it, and everything within ourselves, we trust that that's who we're going to be with for the rest of our lives. So we make that commitment. But I think what makes me see how some people see the living together versus the getting married is because they're just not sure. And for right now, it just works for them. Now, these were the cons. And like I said, what I found interesting was the responses that I got, there were more cons than there were pros, but it's still one of those situations where people just find it more attractive and it's more beneficial for them. The first one is, oftentimes a person's standards for a live-in partner are lower than standards for a spouse. And when I read that, I just kind of stepped back and I was like, ooh, because I had to digest that for a minute. And I had to actually take a look at my situation and the things and the times that I've actually lived with someone and thought about it and was like, you know what, you're right. Because three times in my life, I've lived with someone. Two of those three times, I knew I wasn't going to marry them. I knew they weren't husband material. But as the response goes on, says, this equals to being with someone of lesser value than you really want or feel you deserve. Living together relationships are often based on maybe you'll do, or for the right now, instead of the lifetime commitment of we do and forever that comes along with marriage. Bottom line, you end up settling because you are less likely to end a bad relationship with someone you are living with versus someone you don't. And that kind of just made me think. It was like, okay, if someone is living with a person and things just kind of work for them, whether it's for financial reasons or for whatever some of the other cons that I'm going to list are in play, but things just aren't working out the way you want them to, you'll tolerate that relationship because there's more pros in it for you than there is cons, or the pros actually outweigh the cons. So you stay with it. You know this is not someone that you're going to end up marrying, but you just deal with it because, as I said, the pros outweigh the cons. Then the next one says, couples who live together are less likely to plan financially for their future. Instead, they focus on the now. Whereas married couples create a partnership where they plan for the future, build and share their assets, and build wealth and create a strong foundation for their family. So it's like, you know, if you're living with someone, you're not planning for the future. So it's short term. So you know this is not something that's going to end up being a long-term type of situation. The other one says it offers a false sense of commitment. People believe if they live together, there's automatically a strong bond of commitment, but that's not always the case. And that one kind of said, So some people, and this I know to be true. I mean, I've heard several people who have, you know, kind of done the move-in thing or doing the move-in thing and live together thing, and they feel like, well, if I'm living with him, he's committed to me and no one else but me. Whereas if he has his place and I have my place, he could possibly not be totally committed to me. So if we live together, then I know, quote unquote, he's mine, which is the mindset that some people have. Then the other con is, and I know I'm throwing a lot out at y'all at one time, but I'm just hoping that when I'm done, y'all will just go for it and break down everything that I'm saying. The other one says you end up stepping into the husband and wife role, whether you intend to or not, without knowing what it truly takes to be in that role. You also inherit the parental responsibility, even if the child that lives in the home is not yours. And that one right there says to me, if we live together for all of the conveniences of everything else, because, you know, it's easier for us to you know, combine our income and we don't have to struggle together, but I got a kid. So, you know, when I have something to do, you got to be the father, even if the person doesn't want to be the father. So now they're stepping into the role of being a parent when they don't really necessarily want to be, because financially it's to benefit them. And y'all know how I am about the kids and relationships. That one to me just kind of struck a nerve, I think, more than any of the other ones did, because now it's saying that I'm going to risk the child seeing this as being a commitment when it's really not. It's all about finances.
That's very interesting. Because, I'm gonna talk on the part of the parental responsibilities, and I'm going to speak for guys specifically, because I hear more guys say it than anything. But a guy might not mind that, you know, the girl he's dealing with has a child or has 15 kids, just throwing a number out there. But then they have it in their mindset that, oh, no, they're not mine. I don't have to take care of them, everything else. And like you said, once you move in with somebody, you don't initially realize, hey, I'm moving in with this lady and she got 12 kids. And eventually I'm going to have to be the father in the life because their father is either locked up or he doesn't want his kids. So somebody has to step up and take that role. But like you said, you come into a situation not realizing what you're getting into. And then you have the women who say, oh, well, he has kids, but they stay with their mom, so I don't really have to interact with them. Yet something might flip, the script might flip, and the father takes custody, so now you have to be the stepmom. or you have to be the mother because the mother's strung out on drugs and the court don't think that the kids should be with their mom. They should be with their dad, who has a relationship, who has a mother in the home or a mother figure in the home to help raise the child on what we call traditionally have a mother and a father,
right.
Two parents not living in a broken home. And then on the other part, hey, I'm going to talk a little bit real quick. I've been listening real and thinking. The other part of me is saying, you know, moving in for the benefits as far as financial benefits and stuff like that, you can move in with somebody who has $2 million home, $5 million car, but that don't mean that you're going to benefit from their financials. They might be struggling like all get out to keep up with that stuff, but you don't know that. So you move in with this person because you see the glitz and the glam on the outside, but once you move in, then you see, oh, well, they're struggling.
Right. It doesn't look the same on the inside as it did on the outside.
Right. They don't have furniture in the house. They got stuff in Value Village. They ain't go to IKEA and get their stuff. They didn't go to Louis Vuitton and get a Louis Vuitton bedspread. They went to Walmart
right.
and got that shit for $10.
Right.
And it's not all it's cracked up to be. And too many people too often fall into that situation. Now, I'm not saying once you move in, you're not going to, you know, get closer with this person and eventually do decide to get married, or you accept what they have or what you thought they had and they really don't. But that right there makes somebody leave you. So I thought
right.
you had this that
because,
and third, but you really don't.
Right, because one of the things that someone said was that they did mention the financial part, and they said the cons is it's a huge financial responsibility, not just a benefit. See, people kind of look at it as it's a benefit because we can combine our incomes, but then there's the part where it's a responsibility, not just a benefit. And the person said, living apart and being in a relationship means y'all don't live together, means you support your partner in financial hardship. Where if we have our own separate places, and I'm short how many ever dollars on the electric bill this month, and I just need, you know, $200, yeah, you can help me out. But when we're living together, that means you provide for your partner. So what if you move in with this person and then they lose their job? It's no longer a financial benefit for you. Now it's your responsibility because it's not just your roof over, not his roof over your heads. It's our roof over our heads, and we're not even married. And there's a huge difference between supporting someone and being responsible for someone. So people kind of look at it and they look at the whole, oh, we get to split the rent now. Well, what if that person loses their job? I've struggled on my own by myself, but now I move in with this person and, you know, something catastrophic happens. And now I'm totally responsible for everything for two people where I was only responsible for them, you know, by myself, and I'm not married to this person. So, you know, it's like you said, you kind of look at it one way from the outside, but then when you're in it on the inside, it looks totally different. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, I see, you know, Mr. I don't want to throw names out there because I could be calling somebody's name and somebody think I'm talking about a real person. But, you know, I meet Pookie, and Pookie got this real nice house. And if y'all ever found out I dated a dude named Pookie, if y'all don't pull me up about it.
Why would you talk about Pookie like that? Where am I just calling and ask you, what the hell is wrong with you?
I'm sorry, because then Pookie find out that I'm dating Ray Ray, and then he gonna have something to say about it. But, but I mean, let's think about it. What if I'm dating this guy, and he just shows me this lavish lifestyle that he convinces me is better than me struggling by myself? You know, move in with me, and I'm gonna be honest, I fell into that at one point. And then when you read the book, you'll realize that I dated a guy who I always was at his house. So I was paying rent one place, and I was hardly ever there. So I moved in with him. So I didn't have any bills. I think I had one bill, which was a telephone bill. And back then, you had to pay to call long distance. So the long distance bill kind of, you know, it had some value because I called, you know, home to my mom, and I called home to, you know, my dad and my grandmother. And, you know, that was my only financial responsibility. But when things went bad. Yes.
Shelly, but not only do you pay that telephone bill, but you want to pay that telephone bill because when you throw your ass out the door, you want to be able to call somebody to tell you, come get you.
That's why I needed to make sure I could pay that bill. Because trust and believe, back then there were no cell phones. And when I needed somebody to come and help me pack my stuff when I moved, I did need to make sure that bill was paid. And it was. But the downside to it was, he was not someone that I knew I was going to marry. I knew I wasn't going to marry him. When I moved in with him, I wasn't ready to get married. But I moved in for the financial benefit. That was the pro for me. I didn't see any cons. I didn't see the downside to, you know, moving in and living with someone, other than the fact that I took on the responsibility of being a wife, which I really played the role of because I did the cooking and the cleaning and, you know, all of that other stuff. But that's not what I asked for. But it was a role that I walked into. But all I saw was the financial aspect of it. Oh, I'm not responsible for, I don't have to be responsible for paying anything other than a telephone bill every month. He pays the mortgage on the house. He pays everything else. I get to keep the rest of my money, shop, hang out with my girlfriends, and the rest of my money is all my own. But when the relationship went bad, there were no pros in this. And I look back on it, there were no pros. So had I not stayed in my own apartment by myself, I would have seen that this was a situation that wasn't going to be long term. But for the financial piece of it, I did it. So, and it's true. You have to look at every side of the situation, and it does depend on your age. And that's another thing that I found out was that, you know, it has to do with your age. I mean, 20 some years old. I don't know a lot of 20-some-year-olds that are interested in getting married. Late 20s, that's something different. But when you're 22, 23, marriage in today's society is very rare. Generations ago, it was the average age, you know, early 20s, early to mid-20s, was the average age that women got married or men got married. If you were in your 30s, somebody wondered what was wrong with you if you weren't already married.
But
so.
Shelly, but you have to remember, there's two things that we do, we constantly do. A lot of us, we do it, and we catch ourselves after we do it, and we cannot get out. Two things is selfishness and settling. We're selfish because we want what we want when we want it. So we go and we find ourselves this man who can take care of us. Settling, we're lazy. We don't want to go out there and enjoy ourselves and not labor, oh, that's my baby, that's going to be my new baby daddy. We do it all the time, so we fall into these traps. But I tell you what, though, for the selfishness and the settling comes the children who don't see a parent, a mother and a father who's in love. They don't see that relationship. So guess what happens? They repeat the cycle, and it goes on and on and on. If you don't see it, how would you be able to experience it? I grew up with an aunt and an uncle who, don't matter what they're doing, it, what they're fighting for, is, sweetie, honey, dear, we don't have those kind of things anymore.
Mm-mm.
So when the children don't see the love, when they don't see all the struggles that we're going through, and at the end of the day, we're still together, why would they want to get married? You can't blame them right now for living with somebody for a long period of time because they think in their mind, if they don't live with a person, they don't get to know the person. But the bad thing about it is they don't give it a long enough time to figure out the man for things when he goes to sleep and you still have to put up with him. Or at the end of the day, you want to kill him because he did something. But that's what marriage is. They don't give it a time enough. Nobody told them how long they should stay together to figure out if this is what they want or not.
That is true. That is so very true. And like you said, you know, children see the I don't want to use the word dysfunctional because maybe it's not dysfunctional, but they see the lack of what it takes to have a happy marriage. But then again, you know, and I will go back to this. It's one of those things that just totally confuses me, but I think it has a lot to do with knowing your worth. And we can tell our children, we can teach our children, but it's still something that they have to have within themselves to know and understand for them to get it. Because the one thing that the couple talked about when I was talking to them, and it was funny because they just wanted to go into details about being married and what it's meant for them to be married for so many years. They have three children. Two of them are daughters, and both are divorced and living back at home with them because they were the rebellious children. They chose to do the live with someone versus getting married to. It didn't work out, so now they're back home with the parents. Whereas the son took his time, felt that the right person, he had met the right person, he married her, and they've been married for, I think he said, like 6 years. But the daughters, marriage wasn't, that wasn't what they were interested in. They just felt that living together was the route for them. So it's these are, I mean, this is the couple who said 47 years and never a break in service. So it's how a child perceives what a real relationship is about. But it's still within them. They have to know and understand what their true value is, what their true worth is, and they have to know and understand that there are pros and cons that come with not making the commitment as well as making the commitment. So, I mean, it's one of those where you all you can do is set the example and hope and understand that they get it.
Mm-hmm.
But doing the whole living together thing, it's an example that you just, that's the only thing that they're going to see, because they're not going to see the true value and the true dedication and responsibility that it takes to being married. Because like you said, you can't just wake up one day and say, well, he snores too much tonight. He snored too much last night, and I've had too many of those nights, and I just don't want to do it anymore. So I have one more piece that I want to add to this. And after this, we're going to move to the segment of the show where I just, tonight, my two cents is just one that ties into what we're talking about, but I want to give everybody an opportunity to give their two cents. But I want to open up the lines to see if there's anyone who has a question, comment, or something that they want to add to tonight's topic. But with the pros and the cons that I heard from the research, I have to wonder why it is that so many men and women, and this is not just women or just men, it's both, that are not looking at the long term versus the short term. Now, I understand the economics have a huge part in the whole planning of the American dream. I mean, like you said, Sarah Lynn, there's the, we got to buy the dress and, you know, you got to have the rent the hall and pay for the caterer and the decorations and all of the finances that come along with the whole process of marriage. If you want that fairy tale wedding, it's a whole process. But there's nothing wrong with wanting a fairy tale wedding, well, you know, with the ceremony and the honeymoon and everything that you dreamed of. But I have to ask the question, if the plans, and I will say this, in today's society, we can't we can't invest. I mean, the average American, the middle class American, can't invest $15,000-$20,000 in a wedding. We just don't have it. Now, if you're, like I think Jane said, you watched The Housewives of Atlanta, and who was it, Ocho Cinco and somebody that got married?
Yeah, I forget what her name is, but the real pretty one.
Okay. I'm sure they had a very lavish wedding.
I'm sure they did.
Nene probably cost a whole lot of money.
Was it Nene?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Nene. It was on the last season. I don't remember what her name is.
Oh, the one who has the show going on right now, the white one.
Yeah, the one when Ocho Cinco beat her down and had 6 inches on her forehead.
Oh, the one that he headbutt.
Yeah, that one.
I'm sorry, it's not funny, but, you know, I mean, they create their own media, so that much I do remember. He headbutted his wife, and she filed assault charges against him or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I do remember hearing something about it. But the average American can't afford that kind of wedding. So it does create a certain sense of apprehension when it comes to the, you know, the whole fairy tale wedding thing. But if you postponed those plans for 10, 15, 20 years, what's really going on? Because there's a whole lot of people out there that are living together and have lived together for 10 years. And whenever you meet them, this is my fiancé. My fiancé for the last 10 years. So you have to ask yourself, really? Y'all living together, you're calling that person your fiancé, but y'all been together for 10, 15 years and y'all still aren't married. What's really going on?
I mean, I kind of feel two-sided about that in a sense, because and I'm saying this from an old coworker I know. She just got married about a year or two ago. Yeah, about a year ago. But her and her now husband, they had been together for probably about 10 years. And when I had the conversation with her before, you know, I left my last job at the Navy Yard, she said to me, she said, you know, we just don't feel the need to rush it. We've been together this long. We have two beautiful kids together, and they're happy. They were really happy, and that's one thing that always takes my mind, especially when you brought up this topic to me earlier this week. They just didn't feel the need that they had to rush it, and they just wanted to wait till the time is right and finances and everything else so that they can have their what they had their dream wedding, and you know the family was stable, the kids are in school. They're both working, you know, she's in school, my old coworker's in school. And some people just want to take that time to make sure this is exactly what they want, whether you're engaged for 10, 15, 20 years, whatever the case may be. So, I mean, but then again, you have those who wait around for no reason because they want to break up and they still want to play the field and do their dirt on the side, but they don't want to be tied down just yet. And to me, that's just stupid. I'm a firm believer in not cheating, but you know,
it boils down to the lack of true commitment.
Yeah, some people just can't do it.
Well, one of the things that I found in when I was researching this topic was a question that I thought was really interesting. And you know, I'm so, you know, how women think and how men think. And the one of the topics that I did see, and I've read several articles on that were related to the thought process of this. And the question that came up was, do women see living together as a step towards getting married, while men see it as a way to postpone marriage? Because I think a lot of times, and this is my own personal opinion, and it's just looking from the outside looking in, but I've seen several situations where, and I have guy friends who basically have the woman that they're in a relationship with who wants to get married, but they're not ready to make that commitment. So living together is a way to, in a sense, for them to put up the front that we're preparing for the marriage. Or the women see it as we're preparing for the marriage, where the man sees it as I'm postponing this marriage, but I'm going to feed into whatever her need is, or her need to be married and want that whole fairy tale thing. But I'm just, the living with her is just to postpone it. And if I can do this for the next how many ever years and, you know, promise whatever, put a ring on her finger and never set a date, then this is what I'll do. Because I believe, as Sarah Lynn said, it goes back to that selfishness.
I know what you think.
I don't want to be, I'm not ready to break up with her, but I ain't ready to marry her either. So if living together, it does what I need it to do for her, then yeah, we can go ahead and live together. Come on, let's go. You can have that closet, I'll have this one. But we're not setting a date right now.
But Shelly, sometimes the relationship gets to the point that the woman wants it more than the man. And the man drops so much hints that this is not going to work, but at the same time she's picking out the dress. So you can't, he wants to be there, but he doesn't want to be married, and you know for a fact he's not going to be married to you, so you're living a pipe dream. But that's all right for now because the selfishness, you know, I want what I want, mm-hmm. so for right, right. for now until I need somebody else, this is it.
Right. Or for the selfishness of, I don't want to be by myself. So if I tell you that I'm never going to marry you, then you're going to leave. Because if wanting to be married is so important to you, I risk you leaving me. So I'll tell you that, yes, we'll eventually get married. Because I know that if I tell you that we won't, I'm going to end up being alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very, very sad. So at this point, I'm going to open up the lines to see if there's anyone who has a comment, question, or anything that they have to say about tonight's topic. And just give us what you think about what it is we're talking about tonight. First of all, I'm going to open up the line to a DC caller, area code 202. Last four numbers is 4869. I'm opening up your line, and I want to welcome you to the Red Room. Caller.
Welcome. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. What would
I know we threw a lot of information out there. Just, I mean, take as much time as you need to tell us what you think about the topic that we're discussing tonight.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Right. First and foremost, what I want to say is marriage is, it has been portrayed, and people see this fairy tale, which is what has been presented to us, not to our parents, as, you know, this fairy tale wedding. You never really see what's going on before, but you see the fairy tale. The guy is really dressed. He's looking in the female's eyes. She's neatly dressed. And, you know, the whole nine yards. But back when our parents were courting and stuff like that and getting set for marriage, they only had that fairy tale, like a prince and a princess, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in these days and time, you have the modern day people. They realize there's the have and the have nots with Tyler Perry. It has, I can't think what the other show is called, the couple that's constantly fighting and she's sort of insecure. It have these examples. To at least back in the day, it was a white fantasy, a fairy tale of a white male and a white female. In these days,
kind of like
the
Leave It to
People that to Beaver.
Kind of like the Leave It to Beaver kind of, what was that TV show? The Cleavers, I think it was, where that's the life that you saw as being married.
Right. But no, we have all these different, we have the internet, we have all sort of social media. We back in the day, there was just the nosy neighbor to give you feedback. We don't have to rely on that nosy neighbor anymore. We have a best friend that we can go by and have a little glass of wine. We have our sisters, like maybe in another state, another country, that we could reach through Facebook, Twitter, you know what I mean? Text, etc. We don't have to go to bed at night angry. We could just pull out our cell phone and tap, 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 and we can say, hear what so-and-so did to me. And we can get an instant feedback. So to me, personally, marriage to me is not the best thing. People portray it as the best. If you ask yourself, what do you get out of a marriage? What do you get from living together? You get the same thing. And in these days and time where we have, I can't say it, but it's like lesbian, gay, transgender, straight. You know what I mean? There's that curveball where the same-sex marriage gets insurance, etc. So back at, when you marry for insurance, stability, etc. This is 2013. You don't have to marry to get that stuff anymore. You don't. So and you, when you marry and someone says, hey, babe, I'm done with it. I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. You feel really foolish. You feel let down because you put in everything as a female expecting to get what you put in there. And when someone else, when the male comes and says to you, this relationship for some time, no, you couldn't even see it coming. And he comes up to you and say, I don't want to, more or less it's the male saying this, I don't want to any longer be in a relationship. You could really be like that guy who went to the Navy Yard and shoot up the entire neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But if in a living together situation, you say, thank God I didn't tie myself to that son of a bitch. Or you know what I mean? Because you could just walk out of the door. And you could just say, if there's a child involved, if you were married, the child was going with the mother anyways. So if you're not married and living together with that person, the child is going to go with you. So I want you to tell me, not tonight, or anybody could tell me, why get married? Your parents, that couple that you met at your job, you need to get that lady to the side and you ask her, he's not here, sweetie, tell me the truth. And she will tell you what she went through with that guy. If they didn't have problems in their life, I raise my hands to them. You know what I mean?
I'm sure. I got you. You're right. That is a total. That's an interesting, very, very interesting perspective. And
because if you look at that program, ID, there's a program that comes on at night. And these people, a husband may have killed a wife. The majority of the time, a husband killed a wife. And if you go down that neighborhood and you ask, the neighborhood people would say, they were a really loving couple. The kids were so happy. Don't believe everything you see that you can't see, I should say, that you can't see.
I understand. I mean, I've watched those shows on the ID channel. I'm so, like, addicted to the ID channel. If you turn on any TV in my house, probably when it comes on, it's going to come on the ID channel. And a lot of those shows do represent the mysteries that they're solving, or the criminals or the crimes that they're solving, and the criminals are someone who has committed a crime based on something from a marriage, bad relationship, something. So, yeah, you're right. What we see from the outside does not at all represent, you know, what goes on the inside. So
the saying is true.
Don't judge a book by its cover. And you're right. I'm calling you right. I mean, everything that a person tells you is not necessarily the way that you know, or is not a true representation of the life. I mean, maybe that day was a happy moment for them. And, you know, it was just one where all they could see was the good of the 47 years that they've lived. But I still have to say that whatever bad happened in those 47 years, it wasn't bad enough for either of them to jump ship and say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Even if it was that bad, they just had the willingness to work through it.
Right. On the other side, it's, I mean, I'm just starting to feel that marriage is like, and I was trying to find a term to describe what it is that I see from, you know, from what's going on in society. And it's sad that we image or we duplicate so much of what we see from social media, from celebrities and from TV, but it's almost like what we see and the representation of the whole theory of marriage is so negative, it does make you wonder, why would you even bother? Why? I mean, with the statistics that show that, and this is argued, 50% of marriages end in divorce, it's like, why would you even, why bother? So I thank you so much, caller, for your feedback. I totally understand, you know, your point. And it's I think it's just one of those topics where, you know, we will constantly be trying to understand, you know, how we moved from what we saw our parents do and how they stayed together to, you know, where we are now as a society, and the value of marriage is no longer as important as it was years ago. With that being said, at this point, we're going to move to the segment of the show for my two cents. And I'm going to start, and I'm hoping that at some point, I will ask if there's anyone else on the show tonight that is calling in that has a question, comment, or something that they want to add, please press 1 on your phone. The chat room is open. If you have something that you'd like to add, please feel free. We will share it on the show. So, again, if you're calling in, please press 1. And at this point, we will move to the segment of My Two Cents. And My Two Cents is an opportunity for us to just share whatever our opinions or topics. It's like kind of like whatever just kind of raises a hair on the back of your neck or strikes that nerve in you that you just kind of want to throw out there. It's kind of like a venting session. So feel free. I'm going to start. And my two cents basically kind of came from the topic of tonight's show. And I'm just going to put it out there, and I'm going to say this. And I may be criticized for it, but guess what? My opinion is like everybody else. I have one, and so do you. I'll share mine, you share yours. So my two cents is this. For everyone out there who is straight, heterosexual men and women, I'm going to need you to have a seat in a corner somewhere. And before you sit down, I want you to put your picketing signs on your little poster boards or whatever you wrote up and created in a bonfire somewhere where you are protesting gay marriage. And I say that because until we as straight people, and when I say we, I don't include everybody, I just say me. I mean, it is what it is. Until all of the straight people in the world can get the numbers to show something lower than the disputed 50% of all marriages end in divorce. And I think the reason they're disputing is because they don't even want to make it seem as though that's there that many failures out there for something that we volunteer to do. Until we lower the numbers or find a way to end so many marriages, stop so many marriages ending in divorce, we really need to work on fixing these straight marriages that are what society so-called calls as normal, whatever that means, and stop worrying, focusing, debating, protesting, whatever it is that you do, about the right to get married. And I'm going to say this as I clear my throat. I have to applaud gay couples who want to take the plunge and make the commitment. Because many of those couples have been together far longer than many of our straight relationships. No one understands that they lived together instead of being married because they had no other choice. That was the only option that they've had. And anyone who sees the mockery of what a straight people have made of the institution of marriage and still want to fight so hard for the same thing, more power to you. I'm holding up a sign with you, and I'm straight. Maybe gay marriages can teach straight people something. Because the bottom line is, you can't pick and choose which rights or wrongs you want to follow for religious reasons, because that's the reason why most people out there holding those signs up. They want to claim that according to the Bible and for religious reasons and according to Pope this and Allah that and whoever it is that you serve, that being gay and being married is wrong. You can't choose your rights and wrongs that you follow for religious persons for religious reasons and then say being married and gay is wrong. Because first of all, if you're not following every single biblical principle, you can't pick and choose which ones you want to say are right and which ones are wrong just based on what you follow and what you do. People are people. Understand, people are people. You've got to stop focusing on who someone loves and start focusing on you. You got to look at you. Look in the mirror at yourself. Focus on who you love, your life and your marriage or your lack thereof, before you begin to criticize anyone else. Love yourself. Treat people right and stop focusing on how to take away happiness from someone else. Maybe when you do that, you will find happiness within your own self. And that's my two cents.
Shelly, can I put in my two cents?
Please do.
Girl, you know I have to take this one. There were gay people before I was born, and they're going to be gay people after I'm gone. Leave them alone.
See, I don't even know where to go with that one, because it's like closed-minded people want to pretend that all of a sudden gay people surfaced. People are people. That's the thing. Know your history. Know who people are. Understand yourself first. And then learn about other things.
And you know something? The people who they call all these different names, they've been in the closet so long. Think about how long they've been suffering.
Yes.
Trying to get approval from the norm.
Yes.
And the thing about
exactly.
that, they just want to live. If you go in a hairdressing salon, you go in any places that these people work, you get more customer service than you would with anybody else. They just want
just
to be. Leave them alone.
I just had this conversation with somebody. And I know me and Shelly have had the same conversation plenty of times. I don't care if you dislike gay people or whatever the case may be. You will find that, and this is just my personal belief, and I'm not being judgmental nor stereotypical, but you will find some of the best service and the best of friends in a quote-unquote homosexual human being.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not because of their sexuality, but because
they're compassionate people.
And, yes, very.
They're truly compassionate people.
love what we do. We don't pass judgment on anybody. Well, let me take that back. Some of us do, not all of us. But I mean,
you find the exceptions in every category.
You will, but I mean, we're owning businesses. We're doing your hair. We're doing your wife's hair. We're cutting your son's hair. Like, I don't understand. We're making your food in restaurants you love to go to. You don't even know who's in the kitchen cooking. Your head chef who didn't create a damn restaurant could be a homosexual.
Right.
We're the one that needs to give you the loan for the car that you want so bad.
Thank you.
But yet, you have a hate towards us. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
It's not what you guys. They hate themselves.
They don't know how to love
in the first place.
Or they're struggling with something within themselves. That's just my personal opinion. I believe when you have that much hatred towards someone that you perceive as being gay or is gay, you're struggling with something within yourself.
You hate the fact that
really
this person is openly gay.
Yes.
You hate the fact that this person is openly gay, but you secretly you want to come out and let the world know that you're gay, but you're scared somebody's going to judge you the same way you're judging the one who is open.
Right.
It's similar to being gay, to me, similar to a race situation. And white society sees nothing wrong. Nothing needs to be changed because everything is geared towards the Caucasian white society. So everything seems fine with them. So you know what I mean? So other people now, heterosexual, say there's nothing wrong. Everything's fine with us. We're getting everything that we need. So why should we accept gay people? So it's similar to a race situation. If it's in the Caucasian race, everything is geared towards us. We go to this door, it opens. We go to this site, we can drink. We go, you know, everything is a plus sign for the white Caucasian. So there's no reason why they should ban and accept minorities' requests to fit in and feel accepted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then now the heterosexuals, they see it as, oh, okay, this is okay for me. I could put my, you know, everything is fine for us. So why should we ban to accept the homosexual society, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's an interesting perspective on that. It's I accept everything the way that I have it, so therefore I'm not going to accept anything other than that.
Right.
Other than that, I benefit, so why should I dip? If I dip, that means that's making room for somebody else to come and partake of what I am used to getting my standards. You
right.
know?
I will say
but
that
not
years
my
ago,
mm-hmm.
and it gives such an interesting perspective on it because that's just another whole thought process that I personally never thought about. But it definitely helps me understand, you know, why people think the way that they think. And I will have to say that, you know, when I had this conversation with James, when I was growing up, I'm a baby boomer. So when I was growing up, I didn't see anyone in my family or anyone that I grew up with that was gay, except for one cousin who, you know, he was just only described as happy. He's happy. And I didn't know what that meant. But as I got older, and I will honestly say that until I was in my early 30s, that I didn't understand how he was described. I thought he was just the most cheerful cousin in the whole family. Oh, he's just really, really extra cheerful. He got an extra dose of the cheerfulness from the family, so that's why he's the way he is. But it's almost as if no one understood it, so they kind of defined it as a way that it would be kind of overlooked, but not necessarily to stand out. But as I got older and learned and understood that there were differences in people, and you can't look at one person as being so different from somebody else that you ostracize it or you look down on it.
But I remember when I worked in the D.C. public school system, and after my first marriage ended, I worked with this guy who was different from everybody else. He was happy, as my mom would describe it, but he was the most compassionate person that I had dealt with, because I was able to confide in him some things that I hadn't talked to anybody else about, not even my very, very best friend. And he gave me a sense of confidence to the point where he would see I was having a bad day and would just walk over to my desk and simply say, "Grab your purse, we're going to lunch." Okay. And he would take me to lunch, and lunch wouldn't just be having, you know, great food, but it would be taking me shopping to buy a bottle of perfume. And he would just simply say, "You need to smell good for yourself." And I would be like, "Well, I mean, I feel good, but why do I have to smell good?" He was like, "Because this is just something for you." He just, he had this sense of compassion that some of my female friends didn't have. I didn't learn until years later that he was actually gay. And when he felt comfortable enough to tell me, it was like I learned this whole new world of what I thought was supposed to be a hidden world that he embraced and said, "I am who I am. And now that you know, do you feel any differently about me?" And when he asked me that question, I told him, "Yes, I do. I said, I feel differently about you because I see you being bold enough to accept truly who you are and comfortable enough to share it and not give a damn what anybody else thinks." And from that moment on, I learned that you can't care what other people think. You have to stand on your own principles, your own beliefs, and do what you believe is best for you in life. And that's why I say we have to stop looking at people and their choices that they make in life and judging them, and start looking at people as people. Because I will tell you, there's some straight people that will stab you in your back, and you look at them as friends. And there are other people in your life that have more compassion for you and more supportive of you than the so-called people who are supposedly straight that don't have that cloud hanging over them. So, you can call me, you know, pro-gay, anti-heterosexual. I don't care. You can call me whatever you want. But I am pro-people. And I'm all about people loving each other and people taking care of each other in an emotional way, in a spiritual way, in a way that helps us all progress. So if anybody wants to say, "Oh, yeah, Shelly's, you know, pro-gay, she's, you know, we have to question whether she's gay," question it. I don't care. Just no one understand. We have got to stop that whole place where we look at everybody else and what they do that is not what we do and judge them. And look at our and not look at ourselves. So that was my two cents, and I just felt like it was one that kind of fit into the topic that, you know, that was chosen for tonight. So is there anybody else that has? Because I could go on and on about this, but is there anyone else who has something that they'd like to add? Yes,
Shelly. And
yes.
For all the people who go to church every Sunday morning and sit down in the pew and listen for the preacher for hour and a half and abide by everything that it says, because apparently he's supposed to speak in the Word of God, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But according to the Word of God, all children, all people are God's children. So how can they deny that those children the right to be loved?
Right. Mm-hmm. See, we're going to turn this into preaching.
I was going to turn it into preaching. I don't know what you said, but.
Go ahead, please do.
Just this past Sunday, and you know, we went to the same church. But just this past Sunday when I was watching online, he made the comment, well, he said on plenty of sermons as well, but he made the comment about how people kind of sit in the pew every Sunday and try to seem like, you know, they have this perfect life and they don't stand and all this other stuff, but yet they're the ones sitting there talking about the person sitting next to them and at church, talking about gays wrong and all this other stuff. They're the main ones doing the sinning.
Exactly.
So how can you sit here and judge what you consider a sin for me and you doing sinning yourself? You're sinning on things that are talked about in the Bible, but me being gay is wrong.
Right.
How is that, I'm
not understanding.
How is that more wrong than what you're doing? You had a child out of wedlock. You and your baby daddy ain't together. Y'all got married for better or worse, and where you at 2 years later? Divorce.
Right.
Or you used
exactly.
to be a drug addict, but now you're saved, and blame the next person. Saying the next person who is going through the same thing you went through, saying that, you know, they're going to hell because they're doing drugs. You don't realize
right.
you came from that. You've
right.
already been where they are. You just found yourself. So you going to hell
right.
too. I mean,
it just amazes me how people will use what they want to see within themselves as a platform
mm-hmm.
to be able to criticize and judge someone else. And we've got to stop that.
Exactly.
People've got to stop doing that. And I'll be honest. There was a place in my life where I was brainwashed into believing certain things based on constantly hearing things over and over again, not thinking for myself or understanding that certain things aren't necessarily true. It's just a personal belief. See, we can
mm-hmm.
fall into those things too, because I truly believe, and this goes back to what we see on TV, what we see on the internet, social media, all of this kind of stuff. We start seeing too much of the same thing over and over again, so we start believing that it's facts, that it's real, it's what applies to our own life.
Exactly.
But you can easily be bamboozled, hoodwinked, and led astray based on what somebody else says too many times and start to believe it. We got to start looking at people as being people. And I don't want to turn this into a whole spiritual conversation, because one of the things that I try to do is to stay away from that aspect of the show, because I think it will have a tendency to push people away, because, I mean, we all have our own personal spiritual beliefs. But when we get to that point in our lives where we pick and choose what we believe based on what's in the Bible or what we hear in church, we start to get into that mindset where we start to judge other people. If we simply stay in that mode of loving each other, doing what we can to support each other, and helping each other, everything else will fall into place.
Build each other. Don't break us down.
Exactly. It's about uplifting each other. Because what you give is so important. It doesn't matter who the person is that you give it to, just give.
Shelly, could I add something?
Please.
Yeah, I was invited to a church by a friend, and almost at the end of the service, the preacher started to talk about gays and lesbians, and, you know, it was a negative. His words were basically saying, he's not accepting of them, so, you know, in that way. And then when we left the church, the female that invited me there, she said, you know, I noticed since our new pastor came, he's a black pastor, the congregation has been getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And she is looking at it as because it's a black pastor in a, I want to say, the rate more. It wasn't quite a diverse neighborhood. It was more of a Caucasian setting. But to me, if you're in that, whenever you need help, and your family turns you away or your friends turn you away, you know you can always go to the church. And if you go to the church and the head of the church is saying we are not welcoming of gays and lesbians because God does not take this. This is not accepting to God. Therefore, the congregation, if a parent goes to church to try and deal with his or her child being gay, and they say, let me turn to the church for support, and they go to the church, and the pastor is saying, this is not right, this is not right, this is not right. Of course, the congregation is going to start dwindling down, you know, because everybody needs help, regardless of if you're 50, 60, in your 70s. When this is put on you, like, you know, like most people were in the closet, and all of a sudden we're having a high rush of people. Everybody wants to come out. I don't know what it is in the air, but everybody chooses to come out. And everybody needs help. They need to figure out, how do I deal with this? You know what I mean?
That is just, I'm hearing you.
Wow. And if the church is turning them away, we're going to have situations like, what's that show? The guy, I'm pretty sure that's what happened with that Roselli and Isles kind of thing. If your family is not accepting of you, you need to have that church. You need to have something. We were taught as kids to go to the church. A while back, we went to a church, and the head of our church was a female. And one of the rules that she had, we were not allowed to put a lock on that church door. You know why? She said that God wants everybody to come in. And on Sundays, there's this homeless guy. He was not filthy or anything, but you could tell he was not 100% stable. He would come in, and we would all be whispering. But he was not turned away. If you need shelter, you need to know that the church is there. The doors is always open. And the pastors, they have no place. If you're going to be wearing that robe, or not wearing the robe, but preaching the words of God, you need to be able to accept all of God's children. You know, that's just my input.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
I just, when you said that, I just felt a sense of such sadness that it's even hard to explain, because like you said, when your family and your friend cannot accept the fact that you're gay, and you go to the one place that you feel that you can get some comfort, and that turns you away, where else do you go?
Back,
I mean, but then you can't go there, because then you're in a place where, you know, you can't even be who you are with anyone. You can't be who you are with your friends. You can't be who you are with your family. You can't go to the church and feel a sense of acceptance as a child of God. So where do you go? And caller, you mentioned something about the guy from the TV show, Roselli and Isles. And I remember when I heard that you know, he had passed away, I was shocked, because I watched that show. I mean, I would record it on my DVR, and I've been a follower of that show from the beginning, and it kind of puzzled me, because I was like, really? I mean, and you don't know the lives of people, but I don't know if that was his situation, if he was gay and he struggled with that, and that's the reason. Because I do know that I saw something that said that he had committed suicide, but it just saddens me to even try to imagine what it would feel like to have nowhere to turn to. We got to do better as a society. We have to do better as a people. I mean, and I know this is kind of turned in a direction that I didn't even expect it to, but we really have to focus on the whole getting back to that place of where we love each other the way that God intended for us to. I just know and understand that this is something that's going to have an effect on my thought process for the rest of the night, because I've never even thought of it from, and the sad part about it is, as a straight person, we don't have a clue. We don't have a clue as to the challenges. We don't have a clue. We can be supportive. We can, you know, say, I'm your friend, I love you, I care for you, but we don't have a clue.
I think pretty soon we'll have to, I predict, Shelley, that we're going to have, we have to go back to the era where we had the flower child. And everybody,
hey, I'm so with you. I'm so with you. I understand.
What was it? I can't think what it was called when everybody was having that flower child. You know, remember when they had that, the era of the flower child, and everybody was so free and
was,
so
it,
loving.
Right. It was yes.
It was called something.
Oh my gosh, what was that era? I think I was too young to even know it. I'm still not that old, but I know where you're talking about. Where it was called something love.
Yeah, peace and love. Yeah,
peace and love.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to get back to the peace and love state.
Yeah.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah, we had to spread the word of love. It's just. Be happy everybody's alive, and you know, don't wait until something happens
just
to show that you care. No, it wasn't like that.
As long as we don't have to run around with less than nothing, because my body is not that great, you know. Yeah, I'm not doing
it's
the whole naked thing.
Theory.
We can get naked in the red room, but I ain't getting naked in public. I'm just letting y'all know right now. I'm still working on the crunches, and a sister that's about to hit 50 ain't quite there yet. So I just want to say, and I'm so proud, so very proud that I got my AARP card last week. I got my AARP card last week, and I can't wait to find some way to use it. And you know, it's one of those where I've lived to the point where I'm almost 50. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm almost 50. And they gave me my card 6 months in advance, and I was happy, and I said, yes. How much is $17? That's less than $1 a day. Yes, let me have my benefits, and I will claim it, hold it. Yes, where do y'all take this? Yeah, I got one. And you can look at me and say, really? Yep, I have an AARP card. So I don't remember the peace and love from back in the day where it was real free, because, like I said, I ain't there yet, like you said, Lynn. Sister ain't got it together like that yet, but I'm just really feeling like we really have to get back to that place. So with all of that being said, I just really want to thank everyone who has shared with us on the show tonight. Again, if you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have any topics that you would like for us to discuss for next week's show, please feel free to email us at info@theredroomradio.com.
Also, if you're interested in purchasing the book, These Shoes Hurt My Feet, go to the website, ShellyLBrooks.com. Get your copy of the book. We have some updates, some interesting events that we're going to have planned and coming up. Know that we are going to do a Red Room radio show live from a location to be determined. We will let you know where that's going to be. We're going to hold out on that one until the last minute where we can have everybody rush to be where we are. I will say this, that our co-host all the way from Hotlanta will not be over the phone. He's going to be in person. So just know and understand we're going to be scheduling this around his schedule because he is the hardest working man in Hotlanta. But he's going to be coming back to the DMV. And when he does, we are going to have a welcome home party and Red Room Radio show dedicated just to him. I know you didn't even know that, did you? Oh, you know we love you. We're going to have to just treat you good when you come back because you left us, so we're going to have to make you feel extra special just when you pop in. You know, we got to show a brother some love. Again, I want to thank. Oh, you know, we're gonna schedule it around your time. We know how hard you work. I want to again thank my co-host, Sarah Lynn, who has stepped up, stepped in. If anybody knows me personally knows that I call her my ride or die chick because the story with her and I has been one that has just been such an incredible journey. You can't ask for a better friend, better support system. And when I say she will drop it to make sure she's there for me, no one else has ever done that for me. So I thank her each and every week for taking time to be on our show. I thank you, thank you, thank you for all the listeners. Again, if you have topics that you want us to discuss in the Red Room, email us at info@theredroomradio.com. We will be back next week. Next Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and we will do another show with more mind-provoking topics, and we will keep it moving every week. I want to say good night to you all. Thank you for all the listeners that have tuned into our show, either live or the archive listeners, and we will see you next week in the Red Room. Good night.